Kilo. Since 2010, the Introvert Entrepreneur has been providing information and inspiration for introverts who want to amplify their strengths, as well as for the extroverts who want to understand why introverts are so doggone quiet. I'm a professional coach, author, and speaker based in the Pacific Northwest and serving introverts worldwide. One of the gifts of producing these podcasts is that I get to talk to interesting, heart-centered people who are blazing a trail in their own introverted fashion. I learn something from every conversation, and this edition of The Introvert Entrepreneur taught me many things. I learned about the gift of bright, shiny objects, how being an introvert affects how we show up and not show up, and why letting our work speak for ourselves might only get us so far. My guest is Marianne Rodmacher, artist, poet, author, introvert, and entrepreneur. Here's how she describes herself. I write. I create art. I teach, train, and guide. I speak. I act as an actionista and change little bits of the world. I laugh a lot. I love my husband. I walk my dogs. I am committed to an inspiring, intentional, joyful life. I take great joy from doing what I love. I like helping others to do more of what they love doing. I am an absolutely awesome armchair actionista. Marianne is the author of 11 books, among them Honey in Your Heart and Lean Forward Into Your Life. Her work has been quoted in the Oxford Dictionary of American Quotations, hangs in Oprah's headquarters, and in the Baseball Hall of Fame. Posters with her recognizable script are in homes, offices, schools, and businesses around the world. It's even possible you have a Marianne piece in your home, even on your fridge. When she's not teaching or guiding online courses, she's writing and making art, and playing with her dogs, or collecting heart rocks, or reading. Hi, Marianne. Welcome to the podcast. I'm looking forward to chatting with you.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
So what's making you smile today?
My dog is making me smile. All of my dogs, they're so funny and they're each so very different. And my online community is making me smile today in a major way. It's very nice. I live on an island and which is a perfect place for an introvert to
live. Absolutely. You betcha.
And I enjoy a spirit of community around the world through social media. I'm so grateful for that opportunity.
So turning to you as an introvert, when and how did you discover that you were an introvert?
I was very puzzled even as a child because I have a high social conscience, and so as a young person I was driven to social justice issues and repairing breaches in communication and things of that nature that I was very passionate about, but they exhausted me. And even as a young person, I would have much preferred to participate in a pick-up litter event than go to a party, because I just found the social requirement of a birthday party so difficult to navigate, and I thought something was wrong with me that I found events like that empty or somewhat meaningless, and I'd go home so tired and all of the other children seemed to be invigorated and increasing in energy. And when I was a child, there wasn't really a name for it. My sister was titled shy because she was reluctant to speak, and she demonstrated all of the traditional characteristics of a shy person. I, on the other hand, would stand up to a bully on behalf of another child. And so people thought I was gregarious and an extrovert because that's the label that was available for the behavior that they saw. It wasn't until I was in my late 20s and had a chance to take the Myers-Briggs test where I tested way to the far spectrum of introverted, that at which shocked even me. at the time. So that's when I began my search, my search for learning about the role of an introvert in the culture, and helping me be gentle with myself for my introverted ways in an extroverted world.
Yeah, how would you say that your awareness has most profoundly impacted how you show up?
I show up not at cocktail parties. I don't show up to cocktail parties. I don't show up to gatherings whose purpose is a not deep mechanism of conversation or social action, because that wearies me, and it's not an investment of energy that I choose to participate in. So my social life is governed by my deeper understanding of what my needs as an introvert are. And I spend my energy capital in ways that give me the greatest reward and return for my energy expenditure.
Well, now I'm curious about how that translates to you as a business person, as an artist, as a writer, as someone who is putting yourself out there in the world. How has your business and your work evolved over the years, especially in light of your awareness of your introversion?
The first 15 years of my business, I did not allow my staff, any of my public relations people, my marketing people, I allowed none of them to post photographs of me. I wanted the work to do the work in the world, not the personality to do the work in the world. And so nearly 30 years later, people will recognize my lettering style or the voice of my writing before they recognize my name. Someone will see courage doesn't always roar. Sometimes it's the quiet voice at the end of the day saying, I will try again tomorrow. And they'll say, oh, I have that piece in that lettering script in my bathroom. I've had it there for... I know that woman. What's her name? Marianne Rodmaker. So at the halfway point, so 15 years ago, because I've been doing this for 30 years, I realized that I was hiding behind the anonymity of my work, and that if I was passionate about what I had to say, I needed to stand up and be seen. And boy, that first photo shoot was a trial by fire. letting an image of me be affiliated with the work of my heart. And over the years, the deeper my commitment to my work in the world has become, the easier it has been to stand up and be seen.
And one of the things that introverts tend to have a little bit of challenge with is that standing up and being seen. So it sounds like that photo shoot was a powerful first step for you.
Yes, it was a real watermark, as someone might say. It was a turning point in the way that I work in the world. And if I had to be visible for something that I wasn't passionate about, I'm not sure I could do it. But because my visibility is in alignment with the core values of my heart, I spend my emotional and energetic capital doing that. But for example, I'm going to be teaching at a conference for women at the end of April, and I plan my weekend faculty responsibility with sanctuaries. I do not make myself available to the participants of the event the entire time. I present and I go away. And I read a book, I put my feet up, I take a shower, I change my clothes. I do something that changes the energy expenditure, and I restore myself in solitude. And then I go back. It's almost, Beth, it's almost a little bit like being a warrior. If you were a warrior for a cause, literally, or imagine a Taekwondo practitioner, for example, you could, if you were trained, demonstrate and present your Taekwondo for a very long period of time because you're practiced and disciplined and you know it, but you still have to stop and rest and restore and revitalize to, again, practice and demonstrate your skill set. So that's how I manage my introversion in the context of my business. I do not require myself to be a stand-up warrior for 10 or 12 consecutive hours. I build into my work the time away, sequestering, that's a bad word to use.
At this point, yes.
Oh,
but
dear.
Not always.
I loved that word, but now, well, so the setting away of my energy and my publicness.
It's so powerful to honor that balance that we need. And I don't even like the word balance, but to make sure that we are respectful of that energy inside of us that says, yes, I'm here for you when you have that passion and you've have that calling and mission, and I will be here for you if you listen to me when I tell you you need to step away, be quiet. It's a give and take with our energy, I think.
Well, and interestingly enough, Beth, the dialogue that you just outlined for speaking to yourself, it's a very important dialogue to practice with people that we care about. I will be here for you. I will do what it is that we are called to do together, and I need you to be respectful of what I require of myself. Because introverts have friends who are extroverts. I have a dear friend who just Boundary, I don't know that she knows how to spell it, even. And so she'll bounce into my life and want to hug me and stand right next to me. I literally start sweating because my boundaries are being crossed by a good heart. She doesn't even mean to. So my responsibility to her as a friend is not to grit my teeth and bear it, but to say, I need you to respect what it is that I need to do what we do together. So step away from the introvert.
Right. Slowly move back.
Slowly move back. Yes, exactly. And that's okay. That's okay. That's necessary for an introvert to articulate those needs to their friends. Because their friends, if they care about them, would be horrified if they knew how uncomfortable they were making an introvert feel.
There's a responsibility that comes with knowing what you need. And it's
there is.
To yourself and to the people who love you.
That's a very good point.
I want to shift gears for a moment because I know one of the topics you're passionate about is writing. And as we've mentioned, you're a writer as well as an artist. And it's fascinating to me how over the past maybe, 5 to 10 years, or maybe it's been a little bit longer, I've lost track of time, that more and more people are writing because there are more and more platforms for it to be very easily disseminated, whether it's blogging or self-publishing or newsletters, things like an email, of course. And of course, all of this is great for the introvert because generally we do prefer to put our thoughts in writing rather than being called on to speak spontaneously.
Yeah.
We often like to think about it and then put it down on paper. But at the same time, just because there's more writing out there and more people writing doesn't mean that our writing is any better. If anything, dare I say, I think it's gotten worse. social media kind of encourages a shorthand that I think is diminishing sometimes our ability to put coherent thoughts down on paper in a meaningful way. So I know that one of the things that you are passionate about is making people better writers, being able to communicate better through writing. So what practices do you think make people better, or, you know, can contribute to people becoming better writers?
Well, I'll answer that with one very practical, pragmatic exercise. If someone wants to be a better writer and they've written a paragraph that they think is just stellar, I ask them to write it out in longhand. But I'm done. It's there. I have this paragraph. Great. Get a piece of paper and transcribe it word for word from your screen to a piece of paper. And my clients will reluctantly do this. And then the next step is do it again. Write it again. But I know. I want you to write it out in longhand. And this time, because you know it took you 12 minutes to write it out in longhand, go ahead and just get rid of any words that you don't want to write again. It's a sweet little trick that helps the verboseness of social media and typing on a keyboard, because boy, isn't it easy to click out 27 words. But when you have to handwrite 27 words, you take a different view toward 27 words and start the second time you have to write it out, you say, maybe I could say this in 15 or 12. What's the real heart of this? And Beth, that editing process occurred when I first started my greeting card company, because every one of my greeting cards was written by hand. I had this heart vision of creating original love letters for people to send to each other. And I wanted everything to be completely original and touched by my hand. So when I had to write, "There's no one like you. You are absolutely astonishing and amazing. And you startle me every time I see what new great thing you've done," turned into, "Aren't you simply amazing?" Those first dozen cards that said that first thing, oh my goodness. So that is a very low technology, high value, effective way to distill and condense the real intention and the true meaning of your words.
It seems like it would shift it in some way to a more physical, putting the physicality to it would change the perspective.
It does. And you end up asking yourself, and I get this feedback from my writing clients, you end up asking yourself, do I really mean this? What do I really mean? When it has to come not through a machine, but an instrument that you are holding in your hand, neurologists tell us that it's actually a different pathway. You use a different neurological pathway to handwrite something than you do to keyboard something.
Well, the other thing that I think comes up when we're writing, when we're working, is bright, shiny objects, you know, things that kind of get in our way or distract us. And you have a quote on your website that I so appreciate. You say, "Digression is an excellent research tool."
Absolutely.
And it seems like that kind of is contradictory or flies in the face of what we're told about staying focused and don't get distracted. What do you see as the benefits of digression, and how can we use it for good and to make sure it's not just like a way to avoid something that we should be focusing on?
Brilliant ideas are interlopers. They're interrupters. They're the guest that knocks on the door when you're at a party. So your focus is the party and the brilliant idea is the uninvited guest. So here at my writing desk, I'm going to tell you that I can reach my left hand out and there's a beautifully decorated box, and beautiful to me because it's my style and my decoration. And the top says AJA, A-J-A, Awesome Joys Await. And then I have a box that's within reach of my right hand, and that's my worry and my anxiety box. So when the idea, the anxiety, the shiny object comes to me in the middle of a proposal or a chapter of a book or a promise that I'm keeping to someone, I grab one of my little pieces of paper that I have placed universally in my world, and I write the great idea, the awesome, brilliant opportunity. I write it down on a piece of paper, and I put it in the Awesome Joys Await box, and then I go back to my project. When I'm worried, when I'm experiencing anxiety, when I wonder when that royalty check that was due 10 days ago is going to show up, which is, for a self-employed artist and creative, this is a significant anxiety in my life because I don't have a regular paycheck. I'm paid by performance. And so when a royalty check is late, budgets get thrown out the window because my quarterly budget is built upon people keeping their promises to me financially. So that anxiety will come tapping on my shoulder when I'm in the middle of something. So I pick up one of my little pieces of paper and I open the door of my anxiety box. I put a date on it and I say, I wonder when that royalty check is going to show up. And I put it in the box and I shut the, it's a little drawer that I've decorated. Now, my brain then is satisfied. Okay, you did something about that. You looked at the shiny object. You looked at the gray cloud. You reacted to it. And now you can go back to the thing that you were doing. But when you resist, and every mother listening will recognize this, and every non-parent that watches that television show will hear this in their head, Mama, Mama, Mom, 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 Mother, Mom, Mom, Mom. This is what the shiny object does to the writer, the creator, the focused person when they try to ignore it. So my methodology is look at the digression, see, give it the attention, and promise it that it's in a safe place and you will come visit it very soon. And then it stops nagging you.
Fears, distractions, worries, stress, all we can't just push it away, ignore it. Say, go away, slap on a smile and be happy and it'll all be good. It has to be honored in some way.
Absolutely.
And acknowledged.
Absolutely.
What a beautiful way that you've created for yourself.
Thank you.
To do that.
It's very, very effective.
So I want to talk for a second about another. We know you as the creator of these beautiful meditations and affirmations and quotes and artwork, but you also have, I think, another passion that shows up. And like so many entrepreneurs, you've got multiple passions and energy for a wide range of things. And one of those is called life gain, which from my observation, and you can clarify this for me, seems to focus on making healthy food and encouraging people to make healthy food and wellness choices.
Absolutely.
And you created a community of support around that. How has that community supported you? And what would you recommend to someone who wants to create something similar?
Life Gain is a community that I created not as a business opportunity. I'm not selling anything. I rarely use my Life Gain community to tout my work or my books, unless I truly believe that my book is pertinent to a conversation that's happening in the community. And then I'm willing to stand up and be visible as a community member who is an author. But I almost died four times before I was 2.5 years old. And throughout my lifetime have been active and a bicyclist and a body surfer and a runner and still just this large, stout girl. And I could never, I dealt with weight issues the bulk of my life until 5 years ago. I discovered that I have food sensitivities to what were my primary sources of nutrition, bread, cow dairy, and eggs. And if you would like to know the primary things that I have eaten almost all my life, there's the list. And when I kept getting chronically ill when I was a child, what did my mother feed me but toast poured over with milk and an egg on top of it? And nobody could understand why I kept getting sicker instead of better, and why I felt better when I didn't eat anything. It was counterintuitive. So the community shares awesome ideas about how to eat healthfully when you have a busy life, when somebody discovers a product that's organic and affordable and widely available, they share it. And because there's no ulterior motive other than helping each other be strong and healthy, it really works, and it's growing. And so you asked what would I say to someone who wants to create a community. I say, be authentic. If the purpose of the community is to sell something that you use, then be disclosing about that. Don't sneak in veiled references to the product that you're selling. If you're selling, sell it. Own it. Be true to what you're trying to achieve. And if you simply want to create a conversation, then start the conversation and invite people. I don't tag people on the posts. I don't place people in a group that haven't been asked to be there. I try to be very social media polite.
Oh, thank you for sharing that. I think that it's a topic that certainly, at least among the people that I've been colleagues and friends with, the food awareness has been huge. So many have had allergy testing and other things, and discovering that, like you, things they've been eating their entire lives were actually not nurturing them, but pulling them down.
Yes.
Food is a drug.
Well, it is. It's the primary. It's the first drug. It's the first pharmaceutical that we bring to our body. And foods can heal, and foods can cause disease, dis-ease.
Is that community? I found it on Facebook.
Yes. It's an open Facebook community. Anyone can join. And we just ask the participants to be respectful of our objectives, which are to not sell specific products, but to make our community aware of things that are working in your own life.
Well, I so appreciate chatting with you. And as you brought up that courage doesn't always roar quote, I'm flashing back to, it was maybe about a year and a half ago, I shared that particular quote on my Facebook page. And unfortunately, because of the way social media has perpetuated this, but sometimes things like that are posted without attribution.
Yes.
As I'm sure you're well aware.
Yes.
And this particular one did not have attribution. So when I, you know, later learned that it was yours, I thought, oh, that's fabulous. And what was interesting about it is I posted it because it particularly resonated with me at that moment. But it was one of the first things I posted on my page that got this huge response. Mm. It just really resonated with not just me, but a lot of people. And I just thought, wow, that is so powerful. And you have a way of sharing those kinds of affirmations. What do you call them? I mean, you know, how would you characterize?
Well, I characterize it as poetry because it is a condensation of a greater truth written in a way that is lyrical and memorable, which is how poetry works.
Yeah. Yes. Thank you. So much of your poetry is resonates on for me as an introvert. There's something about it that seems to be honoring that inner wisdom, need for calm, silence, peace. It's a wonderful gift you're giving us. So I just wanted to personally say thank you.
Oh, you're welcome, Beth. And here's when I say, takes one to know one.
Thank you. Well, I since you already live on an island, this question might be kind of a natural, because I ask all of my guests that if you were granted a year's vacation on Introvert Island, and you could only take 3 books with you, what would you take with you and why?
I would take the fattest, thickest, bulkiest, largest blank book known to have been created. I would take the largest encyclopedia, and I would take the, now, you might call me on this one, Beth, but it is considered a book, even though it comes in 20 volumes, the unabridged Oxford Dictionary. That's what I would take on Introvert Island if I was going to be there for a year. And I'm hoping you'll give me a pen.
Yes, you can have a pen.
Thank you.
No one's asked that. They've talked about bringing journals and blank books, but no one has said, do I have a pen too?
Yeah. I could make my own ink, and I could fashion pens out of twigs and whatnot, but I'd prefer to have a supply of pens. Thank you very much. So those are the 3 that I would be very content with, because when you think about it, the wisdom of all time is found in a complete dictionary.
Yeah, it's the ultimate record of our history, of our evolution.
Yeah, it is indeed.
Were you, I did this, and I suspect I know I'm not alone, when you were a child, sit and just sort of read the dictionary or read encyclopedias.
Did
you have a favorite volume of the encyclopedia?
I have wanted to have an Oxford unabridged dictionary since I was a single digit. And in fact, I also wanted to have a set of the Encyclopedia Britannica. And as I look behind me, as recently as just last week, I acquired an Encyclopedia Britannica, and I'm so excited. And the dictionary that I had as a teenager, I still have. And I have, it entertains me and delights me to go back and look at the words that are highlighted, because that's how I built my vocabulary. And that's how I, although I attended high school, my real education was at the library and with the dictionary.
Well, how can people learn more about you and your art and your books?
Well, they will be able to go to MarianneRodmacher.com. They could right now, but my website is being dramatically overhauled, and my licensing partner is AppliedInsight.net. This is a new relationship for me. Dr. Deanna Davis presents my work in the world and has given me the opportunity to be the art director for her company. And so even if it's work that I don't create myself, I get to be the art director for it.
Ah, so you get to choose what's represented.
I do. It's very, very fun.
Nice. Oh, what a neat new role for you. I'm assuming you've not done that sort of thing before.
I have not been an art director for anyone else's work. I've always just been director for my own. And working with Dr. Davis with Applied Insight is ideal for me, because now I get to truly expand my creative wings and not have to struggle to be the marketer and the presenter and the person that makes the calls. which I forced myself to do for a lot of years in the life of my company. And Dr. Davis is an extrovert, and she's so good with people. And it brings her great joy to have these marketing connections, and yay.
Yay. Introvert dream.
It is. It's a dream come true.
Oh, well, congratulations.
Thank you.
That is exciting. So would you mind sharing that URL one more time?
I wouldn't mind at all. It's appliedinsight.net.
And I placed an order from there. I got one of your, they're so cool. I had not seen this, but the plexiglass little folding stand that has kind of business cards. I love those.
Long before affirmation cards were popular and trendy and card decks were all the rage, I introduced a little product called the calling card that was the size of a business card, and it had a positive affirmation on it, and it was affordable. And so I've been doing this little thing for a very long time. And so the Just In Case cards are a grown-up version of what I started doing over 20 years ago. And it's like a little rotating art gallery. And the easel is built right into the product. I love them. I use them myself every day. So much fun to like what you make.
Yes. And isn't that the heart of it all? I mean,
Yes. That's
anytime we talk about how can I have the energy or the passion or promote or any of that, that's really what's at the core.
Yep.
Thank you so much for reminding us of that.
You're welcome, Beth.
And sharing your own experience. So thank you. It's been such a pleasure. And I'm looking forward to seeing how your relationship with Applied Insights grows and what kinds of other artists you bring on board in addition to your own work.
Thank you. I look forward to talking to you again.
Thank you.
Introvert to introvert.
Yes.
Bye now.
Bye. Thanks, Marianne. Marianne's words speak to me, and I hope they have moved you in some way. I want to leave you with more of her wisdom, this time about the gap between our current and desired states. Marianne writes, "The jump is so frightening between where I am and where I want to be. Because of all I may become, I will close my eyes and leap." Thank you for listening today. If you enjoyed this podcast, please share it with your social media networks and consider leaving a review on iTunes or on the podcast webpage. If you want to learn more about my coaching, speaking, and training services, you can find me online at www.theintrovertentrepreneur.com. You'll also find information about my first book, Insight: Reflections on the Gifts of Being an Introvert, which is available through Amazon.com. I'm extremely grateful to the close to 8,000 people who have downloaded or purchased Insight, and I hope you will join them. Until we meet again, remember that success is an inside job.